Okay, so overcoming these illusions is important. So it doesn't matter where you are right now. It's always important to look back on your life and ask yourself, am I thinking correctly on this item? Or if you're having an argument with somebody, thinking, well, where did this guy get his point of view and where did I get mine? Let me go back, try to figure out where this guy got his thinking and where I got mine, and which one of us is an illusion, or are we both an illusion? So find the illusion as much as you can and unravel it. But when we find an illusion, when illusion is presented to us in clear language to the average person, he will reject it as the guy pointing it out is completely off base. You know, because we cling to our illusions and our beliefs that are ingrained in us, and we don't want to let them go. They're very difficult to let go. So once a person progresses to the point where he's now connected to the higher spheres, he's able to get information from sources above the physical. He's able to see through illusion. Then the next step is the fourth initiation. And this is represented by Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane and the crucifixion, where Jesus had all this power, and what he wanted to do more than anything else in the world was to build the kingdom of God. But he received confirmation from higher sources that, no, you're not going to build the kingdom of God. You had to be crucified instead. Okay. So that didn't go over very well with him. And he was in the garden, and we all know, he says, Father, if it be within thy will, remove this cup. Nevertheless, not what I will, but what you will. So he was given an assignment that went against everything that he really wanted to do. Could you imagine, put yourself in his shoes? There he was, he had all this power granted to him, and he thought he had an opportunity to build the kingdom of God. I mean, boy, wouldn't that be great to be the one that could build the kingdom of God on the earth, a kingdom that's prophesied by Daniel, that would be an everlasting kingdom and stand forever and ever, bring peace on earth, goodwill to men, all these good things. Wouldn't that be great to be the one to do this? Well, Jesus, it seemed like he had the opportunity to be the one, and he was told, no, that's not in the plan. You're not going to build the kingdom of God. You're going to be crucified instead.
It's like pulling the rug out from under his feet at the last minute.
Right. So he had to let everything he dreamed of go. Now, also, we have the story of Abraham, where Abraham was told he received a promise from God that he would be the father of a nation, and his posterity would be so numerous, they'd be as numerous as the stars of the heaven. And it all hinged on his one son, Isaac. And there he was, 100 years old, and finally he had this one son. It was a miracle that he was able to have this son, and Isaac was a promised son through which the promise would happen. And he heard a voice, and the voice told him, take Isaac up to the mountain and sacrifice him to God. Now, the Bible doesn't say this, but in the book of Josephus, it says that Abraham had such faith that, first of all, the decision was a horrible decision for him. Imagine he comes down from the mountain, and his wife says, where's our son? Well, could you imagine that, James, having to go sacrifice your son and then explain it to Susie? Would she understand?
Explain it to her before you went? Susie, I got a confirmation from God. Got to take Brian.
But the book of Josephus says that Abraham had such faith in God that he believed that if he could sacrifice Isaac, and then God would raise him up from the dead. Now, Isaac was really a symbol of the coming of Christ. And in the course of story of Christ, he was sacrificed and he was raised from the dead. So it's an interesting symbolism there. So he thought, God cannot break his promise. And his promise to me depends on Isaac being alive, so even if I slay him, he will raise him from the dead. And so he had that much faith in God. And just, of course, just as he was ready to come down and slay him, an angel came and delivered him, according to the story. So when the disciple undergoes a fourth initiation, he has to be able to achieve a state of mind where that which is dearest to his heart can be sacrificed. And when he reaches that point, then he's capable of passing the fourth. And this is an important one for the progression of the disciple, because when he reaches this point, then he can be given greater assignments, achieve great initiations. I believe that there's just a handful of people in history that passed the fourth. Jesus did. I think Abraham Lincoln passed his fourth.
J. Smith, John, the Mormon guy.
Joseph Smith,
yeah.
Joseph Smith was given an opportunity for his fourth initiation. He had his third when he saw the light and the presence. And then he had his fourth initiation. The thing that was closest to his heart was he was a hero to his people. And time again, he was all hauled off to jail, and he overcome all the problems, and he was threatened with death a dozen times in his life, and each time he come out of it. One day he was going to be shot. Matter of fact, the story is told in President Kennedy's book, Profiles in Courage, about how Joseph Smith was to be shot at sunrise, and the guy that was to shoot him, carry out the execution, refused to. And Kennedy pointed out that the guy who refused to execute Joseph Smith was one of the profiles in courage from history. But so his followers looked on Joseph Smith as being almost indestructible, like God was with him and there's nothing anybody could do to take his life. And he was seen as a great hero and very courageous by his followers. Well, when a warrant was out for his arrest, which would lead to his death, his brother told him, he says, well, you know, we should just give ourselves up, everything's going to work out. And he says, no, it's different this time. He says, if we are taken, we're going to be killed. He says, no, we're not going to be killed. And he says, he's trying to figure out what to do. He's pacing the floor, and finally he got a revelation. The revelation told him to go west, to gather up whoever would go with him, go west, and then he would gather people in the west and build a new kingdom. And so he did that. He gathered up a handful of people, crossed the river and over into Iowa, and mobs began to form, and all the Mormons began to be terrified. And his wife, of all people, sent him a letter saying, you know, they're calling you a coward here because you're the shepherd and you've left your flock. And so at this point, he was faced with a decision. He'd received a revelation that he was supposed to escape with his life and go west. But everybody wanted him to come back, and he knew if he came back, he said, if we go back, he says, what shall we do? He said to his brother that was with him. And he says, well, God has been with us before. We'll go back, face the music, and we'll get out of it. Joseph Smith says, no, it's different this time. We will be killed if we go back. We're going to be slaughtered. And Hiram then said, his own brother said, well, I'm going to go back with or without you. So could you imagine how small that would make the guy feel? That if he escapes and his brother goes back and faces the music, that would make him look like a much worse coward than both he and his brother escaped together. But his brother goes back and leaves him alone to flee the flock, so to speak, that would make him look really bad. Yet, the revelation given to him told him to escape with his life. And so he was faced with a decision. Will I escape and be called a coward, or do I go back and face the music and be a hero again?